surprised to see so many of you out in this bad weather. We are very appreciative that you would leave the comforts of home on this occasion. We are going to discuss a problem this morning that I think has been generally neglected, and that has to do with certain dimensions and proportions of science. We sort of open with a line, very beautiful line, from Sir Edwin Arnold's Light of Asia, which seems to summarize the scientific dilemma. As veil upon veil we lift, we find veil upon veil behind. Science apparently can find the smallest items in nature, magnify them, only to find there's something else. We can study the stars, but always there's something beyond. We are limited by a universe so manifold in its manifestations that we have no way of really understanding it. But we got a very cute little notion about it about 2,600 years ago by a Greek by the name of Thales. Thales was quite a character, a wise man, one of the seven sophists. He studied partly in Egypt. He was a member of the aristocracy, one of the magistrates of the city of Athens. And he also was asked the question, which someone said to him, Thales, what causes earthquakes? Thales thought for a couple of minutes and said, well, the earth is a ship, and it is floating in an ocean of invisible water. And as it sails along, every so often, somebody rocks the boat. Now, that last remark seems to be particularly fitting at this time, when it would look as though everybody is rocking the boat. So, according to Thales, or extending his thought at least, if all the people riding on the boat are told that there's a whale off the starboard bow, they all rush to the starboard side and nearly sink the boat. Then someone says there's flying fishes on the left, so they go to the port side, and then the boat nearly turns over that way. No one seems to be able to keep the ship of state on an even keel, or the city or state itself in a condition of equilibrium. So somebody's rocking the boat. Now, up to very recently, it was assumed that these things were a series of celestial accidents. No one knew why they happened. There was no real explanation for them. They were the unsolved mysteries of coincidence. Now, even the material scientist is having a little trouble trying to explain some of the things that are happening today. We are in the midst of trouble in every direction. It would just seem as though the ship of state is on the rocks. Something very definitely is wrong. And I think Thales came nearer than anyone else to setting up the theory which was later extended by Pythagoras and still recently in the work of Newton and Kepler. The Kepler work was also given special attention by Carl Jung. The subject seems to be this. The problem is not that the mystery cannot be solvable. The problem is that the human faculties are not sufficiently developed to solve the problem. In other words, that we have much to see that we will not see with the eyes we have. We have much to hear that we cannot hear with the auditory equipment we have. We are surrounded by a great vacuum because we do not have within ourselves the facilities to explore that vacuum. Potentially, we may have them, but we have ignored them. We have taken it for granted that what we see is all there is to see. And by getting various degrees of magnification, we can see a little further into the same thing. But we are not in a position to say that we can lift this curtain, which is a sensory perception pattern of ourselves. We do not know how to get behind the veil which is the limitation of our sensory mechanisms. So it's not what's there that's the problem. The problem is who's going to find what's there. How are we going to discover it? Well, this goes then immediately into a problem of mysticism. There apparently have been people who have gone a little further through the veil than we have. It's been easy to discredit them, simply say it was all hallucination, there's nothing to it. But now, the theories with which we are trying to live are not adequate. And if we continue as we go now, we're going to be in more trouble until something very drastic occurs. We need more insight. We need more understanding of the world around us. The Chinese had an idea about it in the cycle of Taoism, where they tried to explain the circulation of the solar system. They came to the conclusion that the ocean was the source. The sun drew the water upward in the form of mist. It was carried in the air to the mountaintops, where it fell and entered into and became the streams and rivers, and these in turn flowed right back again into the sea, creating a circle in which the atmosphere was purified by the light of the sun. Well, this was in advance of some of the other ancient theories, but it remains still a problem to understand, is there an actual connection, say, between war and earthquakes? Is there some reason why these things occur in patterns as they have for thousands of years? And yet no one has been able to rationalize the patterns. I think we are up against this very simple problem, that we do not understand anything that we cannot sense with our present perceptions and reflective powers. We do not know what the air is or what it has in it, because we cannot see it. All we can see is a little fog or a little mist or something that appears in it and then disappears. We know that it has a limitation, because when you climb a very high mountain, you better take some oxygen tank along with you, because you will not be able to breathe. We know that also that somewhere in this mystery, there is an organizing factor which we're just discovering. When the report was given, that Lady Anne Hamilton fell in a swoon when Lord Nelson was killed aboard his flagship. Everybody said it was a miracle or a delusion. But was it actually such a thing as that at all? Is it any different in basic from the fact that today we can sit in our home and have a direct television program from New York and see it just as though it was being done here? Something went through the air. Something that was received by another set of instruments suitable to receive it. The trouble seems to be there's something out there that we do not have the proper receiving set for. And it's not only something, but it's a lot of things. There are many, many stations in the air. The air is filled today with communication. And yet each of these bands of communication is separate, is able to maintain a specialized existence, and comes to us as though it was the only thing out there. So we are in the midst of a very mysterious situation about the air and the atmosphere around our own particular planet, and, as far as that's concerned, the atmosphere of the whole universe. I think we can go back a little bit to a problem that was handled very well, I think, by Baron Charles Rickenbach. This man did a work on animal magnetism, which proved to his satisfaction and has since been supported by researchers by a dozen independent leaders in the field, that there are communication facilities between humans and humans without sound or noise, or without any connecting instruments, and also means of communicating with every form of life that exists, if we know how. I remember very definitely Mr. Burbank telling me about his researchers. They sent students from all over the country to study with him. They did exactly what he did, but they did not get the results. The difference was that when Mr. Burbank wanted plants to do certain things, he got down on his knees alongside of them and told them what he wanted them to do. Now, the plant has no ears. The plant, we have no way of knowing whether the plant could actually hear anything. But something was communicated. And the final proof of that was that finally Burbank got a Chinese gardener who had the same attitude and also talked to them, and the plants did what he wanted done. But those who didn't ask them got nothing. Now, this kind of ties into theology, it ties into all kinds of fields of thought, but it seems to indicate that there is a vibratory system of communication that does not depend upon words, but depends largely upon thoughts, or even more definitely upon moods, upon the conditions of the individual's internal life and his ability to project feeling. That the communication is on the level of feeling. The communication is sympathy, as against the common antipathies with which we insult each other. That there is something there seems to be beyond question. Research with animals and plants have both demonstrated this. And the development of plant life as a result of being given the right instructions. I remember my friend William Gray, who was quite a healer before he passed on. He had some flowers in a box. And his wife had some flowers in a box. And she wasn't very sure of what he was doing. But the flowers were planted in the boxes the same day. She did the best she could take care of them, and he told the plants what to do and how to grow, and his grew twice as fast. How? No one knows. Also, Mr. Burbank was quite certain that he could communicate with his dog. Many people feel they can communicate with the animal. When you speak to your pet dog, does he understand your words? If the dog is a Greek dog and you're a Turk, can he understand what you mean? Probably not. But there is a feeling in you that you have put into words. And that feeling in you seemingly picks up a vibratory sympathy. Not a sympathy that is rationalized as we know it, but simply that there is a communication between all forms of life, a communication of mood and sympathy. This is what has been discovered also in researches with life in India by plant specialists. And there are workers now here in this country learning to talk the language of plants. And this is quite possible, because you can talk in any language you want to. It's not the words. It's the feeling. It is the friendship. It is the understanding. It's the sympathy. It's the transmission of essential knowledge in the form of vibration only, one vibration picking up from another. The same is true, I think, in most of the cases that we are working with in connection with world affairs. Our physical earth is surrounded by an atmosphere that probably 6 or 7 miles thick, pretty rarefied on the outside, and within this we are sort of capsulated within an atmospheric field. This is further noted that there is a magnetic field of the planet. This is something else that we are just beginning to understand, although Paracelsus worked with it centuries ago. The Earth has its own psychic atmosphere. It has a magnetism factor. This magnetism factor provides a field of energies, and every living thing on the Earth is sustained by this field of energy. And this field of energy, as the Indian yoga found out long ago, is something that is affected not by what you say, but by what you are. That within every individual is the chemical compound of himself. He is a pattern of vibratory rates. These vibratory rates can be estimated, and can be related to the vibratory rates of other people. We know that some people have a mutual sympathy, a mutual understanding. It is assumed that this is the base of affections, but it is not always working that way. But the actual fact is that we do have a magnetic field. This magnetic field is in the human body also. The human body has two fields of energy, the positive or electric energy and the negative or sidereal energy of magnetism. It also is true that these two fields in ourselves connect us in one way or another, not only with each other, but with the universe of which we are a part. This universe is affected not by our beliefs in the sense of our intellections, but the compulsions, energies, processes, and functions that arise within us. In the Indian system, the cerebral system is under the rulership of the sun, and the autonomic system of nerves is under the rulership of the moon. And the solar energy coming to the earth is divided. A part of it goes to the moon, and the major part of it comes to the earth. And these energies are working all the time. And these energies correspond with the energy of the human being and his magnetic field. We have about 6 billion people now here with magnetic fields. We also have a vast order of other living things, each one with a magnetic field. We also realize, if we think a little deeply, that the sum of all of this attitude can be communicated. If it is possible for energies to move invisibly, there is no reason why we should doubt certain other facts of life. One of the most important problems, for example, at the present time, is the problem of cosmic and planetary sanitation. We are throwing refuse into space as fast as we can, assuming, of course, that the solar power will purify it and return us nice, fresh atmosphere. But there is a limit to what can be done, just as there is in the planet. There is a limit to the amount of refuse the planet can absorb. And we have now a great deal of a problem to worry about. The problems of preventing the refuse from destroying the living. And we have no way at this time to get rid of our own sewage. We have to put it into the lakes and hope that the sun will purify it. But there's going to be and must be a time in which contamination is too great for any factor that we now know to take care of it. And we are making no effort, no understanding to how to conserve the possibilities and resources of the sanitation of the planet itself. We have the same thing as individuals. We poison ourselves with all the foods and things. We poison ourselves with narcotics and all this business. And then we expect our health to remain. We are actually living in our own mistake, and it is slowly destroying us. This concept carries with it the realization that everything that lives is part of a great magnetic organism. The magnetic energies of the planet are at three types. There is an emerging energy, which is a power or work of energy from the core to the outside of the planet. This is a moving energy from the center straight outward. It energizes all plant organisms through the stalk, which is its spinal column. There is an energy which surrounds the earth completely and continuously parallel with the earth's surface, which is associated with the vertebra of the animal kingdom, which is relatively horizontal. Then there's another energy that comes from outside and higher, that comes down and forms the energy of man, who is an inverted plant with his head in heaven, or the root in above, and the body extending downward. All of these different fields have their keynotes, their purposes, and their consequences in the relationships of human life. Now we'll suppose for a moment that the individual, as a neurologist or a psychologist can inform you, gets himself all mixed up with his emotions, his attitudes. His emotions are the more important of the two, because emotions do not have to be audited or brought into conscious recognition. We have a serious negative emotional setback, and a little later we have a thrombosis. Now, the heart certainly didn't know anything about it, as far as the organ is concerned. The heart was not waiting there to affect us. But the situation of vibration which we set up in our personal activity made this heart attack inevitable. It was simply two forms of energy. The heart has its own magnetic field, which is normal and proper if it is properly cared for. This false fear, or this field of negative pressures striking against the heart's field, resulted in a dislocation or disorder of energies, which led to the thrombosis. Now, the same thing can happen in a planet. The planet itself has its own magnetic field, and in this magnetic field, it stores up all of the various pressures of magnetism. We have a war, and then we have an earthquake. Now, it isn't that the earthquake is consciously caused by something out there, or that the earthquake is the result of a conscious activity of ourselves. The earthquake lies in the background of an attitude which is magnetically unsound. A destructive attitude is a magnetic disorder, and further disorders the magnetic field. Every destructive, every unreasonable, every critical attitude affects the magnetic field. And many reports of researchers in this field in which it has been shown beyond doubt that the individual is a field of radiance ever changing with every mood, every thought, every attitude of life. And where these attitudes are good, they strengthen and the individual improves. Where these attitudes are bad, they sicken the person. Where attitudes of this kind by great groups of people go uncorrected, they sicken the Earth's atmosphere. They create the causes of disaster. For this disaster is just a conflict of magnetic fields, in which the normal field, which is right, is afflicted by an abnormal field, which is essentially wrong. And if these wrongs are not corrected, they will do the same thing to a planet that they do with an individual. They will ultimately destroy him. This is all about a battle of things unseen. But these things that are unseen and most part unthought of can be and are, in all probability, the way we are rocking the boat. Now, among attitudes, there are basic ones that produce various chemical and psychochemical consequences. Almost all of what we call the sins represent imbalanced magnetic pressures. They are actually a sick magnetic area. The magnetism is deformed or poisoned in one way or another by an attitude or a mood. The individual poisons himself. A planet poisons itself. The solar system can poison itself. If it permits those things which are not right or not true to endure. Now, in the course of time, man has moralized these factors and has given us a series of great religions. These are not founded primarily upon direct revelations of deity. They are founded upon the revelations of experience. We have learned that certain things will produce certain consequences, whether we like it or not. And instead of these consequences being miracles, they are simply chemical situations arising in the magnetism of the earth or of the individual. So we are living in the midst of a world that we can sicken or improve according to our own attitudes. Now, no one person, probably, is going to be able to make a great change in the world's affairs. But where vast groups of people are united in a similar project, this magnetic project takes large size and pattern. It becomes like an epidemic in the physical world, a mass illness. And an epidemic, in a way, is also a psychological manifestation of the magnetic field of the individual. A panic is a magnetic affliction. It is also true that all mass activities arise, as far as they relate to the individual, in individuals themselves. And through a collective pattern, they become a general or entire situation. So we have a Wall Street collapse, and we say, well, it deserves to collapse. It wasn't right to start with. The point of the fact is it wasn't right, and it did deserve to be destroyed, but every ordinary person saw no reason not to keep it going as long as possible. He did not realize that he was neglecting a dangerous ailment. He wanted to have the profits of his activities. He wanted to profit from corruption. But the corruption itself physically may be a fluctuation in the banking industry. But the real trouble lies in the immorality in the magnetic vibrations. The thing that is wrong basically damages the balance of the energies of the planet, and also destroys the balance in the individual himself as a person. Epidemical diseases nearly all rise from magnetic roots. They represent habits, attitudes, beliefs, processes that are set up by vibration. And each of these things has its own vibration. And sick vibrations attack healthy ones. Sick vibrations take over magnetic areas in the world or in nations or in personal living. A country can be sick magnetically because of the intolerance or wrong thinking of certain of its leaders and no effort made to correct this problem. We can find it all through. Every religion has its magnetic field in which its various teachings are perpetuated and in many cases ministrated into other areas. Everything finally breaks down outside of the visible into vibration. And as far as that's concerned, visible matter is also a vibratory rate. But this vibratory rate we are beginning to understand, but we do not understand what lies behind it. We seem to assume that when we understood the surface of the earth, we understand all. If we are able to magnify a certain bacteria large enough, we have solved a problem. We have solved nothing, because we cannot solve any problem arising from disturbances in the magnetic field unless we correct the disturbance itself, which we have to do by certain disciplines or certain general reorganizations of life. When Apollonius of Tyana, one of the most celebrated of the early thermoturgists, went into India in about the first century A.D., he went to the headwaters of the Ganges and Jumna rivers, and there he found these ascetics. The first records we have of the ascetic life which come from his records and the records of those with whom he worked. He found a group of people in the headwaters of these rivers who had dedicated themselves completely and absolutely to the development of the inner faculties by means of which the extrasensory perception bands could be reached. They were perfectly dedicated, and among the first things they had to do was to get out of their own magnetic field all corruption that would bind them to the mortal and material pattern of life. They had to renounce everything that bound them to matter, or in matter they would live and die. Now, this does not mean that they achieved immortality, but it does mean that they gradually developed a greater resistance to error and gradually developed sensory perceptions for the testing of extrasensory phenomena. And many of them were very accurate and wise in these matters. But they had to be disciplined into finding a way of releasing something of the better rates of vibration. They had to transmute negative pressure into a positive and affirmative energy that could be used to accomplish good. This, in a sense, is healing. We talk about healing at Lourdes and all of these things. The healing is an attitude. The individual goes there sick, But if within himself he has made certain dedications, he has certain positive and constructive beliefs, and is trying desperately and willingly to find the real deeper reasons for things, he may secure a healing. Everyone who goes there is not healed. Only the individual who deserves it by reorganizing his own inner life, not by the outside, but from the inside. And it is the same way in nations. We are coming now to a time when it's becoming obvious that the resources of our planet cannot continue to be wasted without a woeful want resulting in the long run. Some people are taking the vibration attitude, let's make it while we can. That sets up one pattern, but that pattern is not good. Another group says that we should tear down the whole structure and start over again, but that is difficult because they do not know which way to go if they start again. All these different problems require a deeper insight into the pattern of natural ways. The most simple and common pattern of the working with this vibratory field is simply the Sermon on the Mount. Here we have a basic group of constructive affirmations of life. We have the individual committing his inner life to harmony. The moment he is in harmony inside himself, his vibratory rates change and become harmonious. Those who have studied the matter and who have taken many photographs of these changes in the structure of the person, I testify that the moment the individual improves character, the problems begin to fall away. We gain a certain strength simply by being right. Being right means to be normal in terms of vibration. Everything is right vibration. Love is a wonderful vibration, probably the highest we have. Hate is the worst. And these things immediately become psychic toxins. They disappear into the invisible, but they remain. They remain as a source of continuous infection. And as these infections build up, nationally, individually, collectively, we begin to see the reaction upon the energy resources of the planet and of the individual. We cannot constantly think wrong and be right. We cannot continually practice destructive habits and then by some intellectual remedy try to find an answer. Everything depends on the planet and in the individual upon being right. The rightness being that the integrities are correct. When they are, we will have very much less suffering and pain to work from or for. But we have to begin to also realize that we cannot find the answers to any physical problem on the physical level alone. Always an answer has to come from a superior level from that which causes the problem. It has to be above the problem and cannot fight it on its own level. Therefore, if a certain condition arises in society, society must respond by an improvement above the condition itself. If the financial situation is the cause of the trouble, then the problem is to straighten it out and find out how financing can be used for the good of all and not for the profit of one. The moment selfishness enters into the thing, the vibrations all go sick. So you live in a midst of vibratory interpretations of action. Everything that happens, happens for a reason. But that reason is not always visible or obvious or apparent. But it is within the individual. And it shows in several ways. A very serious mistake within the life of the individual will result in physical illness. It may also result in decreased efficiency and losses in various fields. It may break up the home, another loss due to uncorrected mistakes. And so it goes until it goes into national affairs and results in an international tangle we call war. All of these things are based upon the assumption that the individual can do what he pleases. He can try to, but the universe is bigger than he is, and the universe is going to bring him back into line, because it's no other way to go. It's not punishment. It is not an effort to make him unhappy. It is simply a chemistry on the invisible side of life, in which factors that are incompatible injure each other. These incompatibles in some other arrangement might be beneficial, but the individual who is out of balance is rocking the boat. He's getting himself into trouble. And the only answer that we have for the average person is that he shall do the thing himself the best he can. Now, in the Orient, there are certain disciplines that have been set up for this purpose. Disciplines, nearly all of which are based upon common moral principles. They are intensified, they are extended. But the basic problem is that the individual shall preserve his own energy fields correctly. If he does not, he will get into trouble. Now, we have, for instance, nuclear warfare on our hands. Nuclear warfare is a great problem of the moment, one of the very greatest. There's no way of controlling nuclear warfare. There is no way of preventing any nation from ultimately being able to enter the nuclear group. There is no way to prevent a madman from using it. There is no way to take care of the situation except to recognize the danger and take the necessary major steps, regardless of how these steps interfere with profits, returns, and all kinds of political escapades. The nuclear problem has to be solved, or it will break out. The commercial problem has to be solved. Health problem has to be solved. And the solution is the reestablishment of internal harmony, either in the body or in the collective. This harmony, this neutral harmony, is constructive magnetism. It is the normal flow of energy that we all require. The moment we misuse it or abuse it, it turns on us. And it will continue to turn on us until we straighten out whatever we are doing that is wrong. This Reichenbach was well aware of. He was very well able to make the test to prove it, which was very much in doubt at his time. An Indian scientist began studying the reaction and motion action of plants, and he gradually discovered, through delicately constructed instruments, the only thing that he could discover from the physical, because it had to be something physically occurring, or his machinery couldn't register it. He found out that carrots can be afraid. Now, this sounds utterly impossible, but by delicate mechanisms, he saw the carrot moving a billionth of an inch to escape the knife. No eye could see it, but machinery could be created by which it could be estimated. And yet, having discovered this, what do we do about it? There's nothing we know what to do about at the moment, but we must finally learn that we live in a universe that is entirely alive. And what we call matter is merely another form of energy. That we are living in a world in which everything has meaning. And that the final solution is that the individual learns to live with himself first and with the whole world next. We have to live within the normalcy of the environment in which we exist. We have an allotment belonging to the planet. If that allotment is desecrated, destroyed, wasted, then we are impoverished. The same is true of natural resources. When we do take various substances out of the earth, we leave in their place a certain scar. We have devitalized the earth. We have taken away from something from it. There is nothing in the earth that isn't necessary. So if we go beyond a certain point and impoverish it too rapidly, it is going to ultimately develop all kinds of sicknesses. It means we will have all kinds of atmospheric disturbances. We will have plagues. A plague is a generalization of a single ailment resulting from breaking the laws of living. And it spreads because most people have broken those laws. And the vibratory sympathies between one and another we call contagion. all of these things go to causes, and all these causes lie in the individual realizing himself to be a moral unit in a total morality, that he has to begin to do it right. He has to begin to use and not abuse the life energies which have been given to him. These energies are to help him to grow. He has used them to help him to kill himself. To find this out, then, is the beginning of philosophy, and it is also the key to the mystery that we know and recognize of pre-knowledge, foreknowledge. It is perfectly possible, under certain conditions, to see the build-up of something in the magnetic field. If you have energies to solve the problem, if you have means of estimating these build-ups, you can predict events that are going to happen. Unfortunately, the laws for the controlling of these events are not as yet fully understood by humanity. But we do know that the individual can influence the life of the collective. Each person can. We find that the religions are rates of vibration, all of them necessary. Any religion that stays true to its rate of vibration will endure. Anyone that breaks or abuses this trust will be punished. Not by God, not by anything except the vibratory factor to lock in confusion and to deprive its compound of life. Destroy its function and interfere hopelessly with its growth and development. Wherever integrity comes in, things get better. The same we can say is in the case of AIDS. Here we have something in which the magnetic field has played a very large part, and the perversion of the magnetic field has caused a vast amount of trouble. But it is all the individual abusing the energies which have been given to him and are part of the maintenance of the world in which he exists. Our planet was equipped as a place of existence and livelihood for an evolving form of life, a form of life which has broken down into several major levels, but these levels all live here together, and they're here with all that is necessary for their perfection and their growth and survival. Little by little, we have broken and abused these laws. Why? Because we are ignorant of them. And why are we ignorant of them? Because most people have never heard of them. And also, there's no way of finding anywhere that we know of any general curriculum covering them. There are individuals working with it, but the world in general simply does not accept the fact that there is a sympathetic or antipathetic between living things. They will not accept the fact that what the individual does determines what he is. They rather take the viewpoint of what a man is, that he will do. But in this case, he isn't right, and what he does would not be right either. So we need to know the need for a complete reconstruction of our way of life. We need to take out of the magnetic field of our energies all ulterior motives. We must get rid of the abuse and waste of energy. We must get over wasting life. We must get over wasting thought, wasting affections, wasting friendships. We must get over the tendency to go into negative relationships with other things and try to realize that we are living on an energy that is available to us if we deserve it. But we are the only ones that can cut it off. If we do not receive it because of the nature of our own conduct and consciousness, then we are gradually eliminated from the pattern because we have lost the source of nutrition. The individual does not live on food alone. He does not live on all the extravagances and luxuries he has come to expect and believe in. The individual lives on the energy of the fields of his planet. And these, in turn, these fields depend upon the sun. And these solar centers depend upon great cosmic suns. But in all cases, energy is available. A right use is rewarded. Wrong use is punished. And the punishment becomes predictable simply from the fact that the wrong use is practiced. You are going to have the effect if you cause it. And this is not a hand of deity with vengeance. It is simply that when we break the law of any form of life, we endanger ourselves. And in so doing, we also endanger the environment in which we live. All kinds of new ideas are coming in. There are going to be a great number of reforms and a great many improvements in human life. But we